Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out?
It is time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, MillertonVet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, founder, co-owner, and chief vet, the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon. It's always a pleasure. And how are you?
Hello, Jill Goodman. I am happy to be here today.
We are always, I'm happy to have you. I'm always happy to talk to you. And we are happy for the information that you are about to impart. So, starting with Lindsay in Hudson, I just had a really confusing vet visit, and they didn't really have time to talk, so I'm hoping you can help. I brought in my 4-year-old spayed Maltipoo to test for Lymes. She tested positive. My vet gave her a Lymes vaccine and said she will need several boosters. My understanding was that the vaccine makes the Lyme less bad, but I'm not clear on how much less bad and in what ways. I also don't get how there can be a Lyme vaccine for dogs and not people. Can you talk about this?
People ask me all the time how come there can be a vaccine for dogs and not people, and that I don't have an answer for that, but I accept that they had problems with the initial vaccine for people, and I don't know that there's enough call for it, I guess, but certainly for pets, they have been, you know, perfecting the vaccine. I don't use it to treat Lyme disease, though. It sounds to me here like this, that Lindsay is assuming that that her dog is being treated for Lyme, although her dog doesn't have symptoms. So I'm assuming her dog doesn't have symptoms. So no wonder she's confused, because I'm confused. So,
even before you start to talk, there's that whole bit about testing positive that a long time ago, and I remember I'm old, but a long time ago, a positive test didn't necessarily mean
the positive. Right. The test that is generally a screening test, and it's testing for, it's called a 4DX, and it's testing for heartworm and the three most common in the area, tick-borne diseases, Lyme disease, ehrlichiosis, and anaplasmosis. We don't see ehrlichiosis that much here, but we do see Lyme, and we see antibodies also to anaplasmosis. So the test is testing for that presence of antibodies. The presence of antibodies to anything is indicating that you've had exposure to that disease. It doesn't mean that you have the disease necessarily. So there is some thought about treating dogs that only have symptoms, in which case, why would we be screening them? Well, we're maybe screening for the other diseases like anaplasmosis that we might catch early enough if they come up positive. We usually do a complete blood count, make sure their platelets are okay. Because these diseases are so prevalent in the area, I think that's why we're doing this screening. The other thing is that for Lyme, you know, Lyme disease can be insidious. We don't have a full understanding, which everybody knows. We don't really have a full understanding about Lyme. And how the very high antibodies, if you have a dog with very high antibodies, how that affects their body in general. So there can be and potentially is a correlation with the level of antibodies and the number of circulating organisms. And so if you're not showing symptoms but you still have high circulating organisms and high antibody, you know, there's some thought that that can affect your kidneys in particular. So, you know, depending on the veterinarian, you'll get a veterinarian who treats everybody that comes up positive on the screening test. You might get a veterinarian who only treats those who have symptoms and doesn't treat anything else. And then sometimes, typically what I'll do is run that antibody level when I get a dog who's positive and doesn't have symptoms to see how high the level is. And then probably we'll treat if it's a super high level. We'll treat for a shorter period of time anyway because we know that the treatment will bring down the level. So that's why it is. It's not a straightforward, situation. And I know that years ago there was talk about using the vaccine if you do have a dog who's positive but it's not something that I would do necessarily.
And I think that there was some discussion, again, years ago of doing it, but that one of the things was that the dog would always come up positive thereafter.
Yeah. They'll come up positive if you're not checking for the C6. So the C6 antibody,
right,
is one that's not associated with the vaccine, and the people who developed it.
Was that an expensive test? There was something around that, or maybe it's now been simplified.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing simple. There's absolutely nothing simple about Lyme disease. We do know that there's definitely more effectiveness with the vaccine than there used to be.
Okay.
Quite a bit better effectiveness. But I think part of the problem with the human vaccine is that it didn't hold its effectiveness, and neither does the dog vaccine, and that's why we booster it every year. And so people are not going to go and get a booster every year. People don't do that really very good, very well for influenza, although the Lyme organism doesn't change like the influenza organism. So with all that being said, I think that that we have a good vaccine, but she should be having a conversation with her veterinarian about, you know, why are we doing the screening? You know, is there a specific reason that we're doing the screening if my dog doesn't have symptoms? And, you know, and where are we going from here as far as her veterinarian's take on the disease itself? When do I treat? You know, I think that this is a conversation with a particular veterinarian.
Right.
I have my own way of doing it based on my experience in my practice. And because it's worked out well with, I used to see dogs with chronic Lyme a lot before I did this, but now I do the Lyme C6 whenever I can. I treat the dogs who have a high antibody level. You know, I treat them for anywhere between 2 and 4 weeks, depending on whether they have symptoms or they might have symptoms of Lyme. And I find that I rarely see chronic Lyme unless I have a dog who is never tested and never on any vaccine or on any tick prevention. And that's where I'll see chronic Lyme, and I'll see Lyme nephritis, which is a deadly kidney disease with Lyme.
All right, so basically, as you said, Lindsay should have a conversation with the confusing vet. Well, with the vet that gave her the and she can...
Yes, so that there can be a better explanation of why this veterinarian is using the vaccine. Maybe the dog was just due for his Lyme vaccine anyway, and this vet is not going to treat any dog who doesn't have symptoms.
Right.
Which is legitimate. As a legitimate way of doing it. And if that's the case, then her explanation is right there for her little multi-poo.
All right. You've talked about it, and you talked about it very adroitly, I believe. So probably in a similar vein, Mike in New Paltz, are animals starting to experience antibiotic resistance the way people are?
Animals have experienced antibiotic resistance for many years, actually, as have people. And but I think there's actually less of that now. Certainly less than I'm seeing. Veterinarians are in veterinary medicine. It's really been emphasized, and probably in part because of the food animal part of it. But emphasized to veterinarians that we need to be good stewards of antibiotics. And I can see the same thing in pediatrics, in human pediatrics. You know,
yep.
They're not giving antibiotics to these babies.
They've stopped lashing them out. Again, I just remember when. You know that I have a sister who is a different generation, but was one of those babies that got everything. Like, you know, if she had a sniffle, she got antibiotics. And
right.
Was appalled, but that's, you know, just me. But and I have seen, though, a reversion in, you know, now that her friends have had babies, et cetera, it's like... She'll ask, well, shouldn't they get antibiotics? No.
So. Right. And same thing with people with these chronic sinus infections, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, there's definitely more awareness about it. Our antibiotic, you know, I mean, theoretically, with the if we don't destroy our rainforest, we'll have, you know, in plants indefinite sources of antibiotics. But that's not to be to be developed in the future. But we really need to be careful about antibiotic resistance. And so, you know, trying to the biggest thing that I saw was resistant ear infections 20 years ago. Probably 50% of the dogs that I was seeing for chronic ears was resistant infections. And, you know, rarely see that anymore. Everyone's careful about not using high-powered antibiotics where they're not needed. You know, now we look in the ears, we swab the ears, we look under the microscope, see really what we need to treat. So I wouldn't say increasing resistance, and I would say that hopefully with time we'll have more and more awareness about it and better stewardship.
Are people asking you about probiotics? Do they? A long time ago, I once told somebody to just take some arnica, and they looked at me like I had three heads, and I realized that I had never put them through the arnica program. For example, that's not a probiotic, but
people are very aware of probiotics now.
Okay.
Absolutely, most people. People take in probiotics themselves. You know, it's still up in the air about whether probiotics make a difference when you're taking antibiotics. But
in general, I'm just talking about general probiotics. There was a wonderful, but it was wonderful, and it had to do with a human study that was done around Chernobyl, and there was this village where no one. Had the after effects and surrounding that other, you know, it was proximate, but these people were thriving physically, living to, just doing really well. And it turned out that they were all huge users, I mean, almost to enough so that it was obvious, of probiotic. I mean, that was their food, that was their system, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Their diet, just massive probiotic. And that was that stayed in my mind because I never just used probiotic for antibiotic. I just used it as an adjunct.
Health maintenance.
Yeah.
For health maintenance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, right. We can all use it, and mostly because of our poor diets in this country, but also, you know, the lack of nutrition in the food that we get from our soil now. So,
right, and also microwaving, which has always seemed counterintuitive, has been shown to not be so good for the living stuff that you need to be living in your food. Like, it deadens your food, it deadens your water. It's pretty
right,
and. And you know, that's now just such an assumption. Stick it in the microwave and bring it to me. I go, how about not? You know what I mean? So, along with the soil, that's just another thing to, you know, just put in the back of your mind. They're not habits. They're systems. They're ingrained systems that possibly can be worked on that will end up contributing to the health of the two-leggers and four-leggers in the house.
Yes, you know, as more work is being done on the microbiome, people are really becoming aware of it, which I think is a wonderful thing.
All right, me and my boyfriend are in hell. This is Bree in Albany. Me and my boyfriend are in hell, a.k.a. we have bed bugs. The exterminator is coming to spray every inch of our apartment tomorrow, and we're concerned about our cat, Fruity Pebbles. The guy says, just wash the floor and it's fine, but, like, really? I'm sorry. What can we do to protect her? I would have the same conversation. I had someone came to my house and they were setting something up and they said, no, we're just going to link this basically to the cloud and I can check it from there. And I said, no, you're not. Oh, you're not.
Yeah, Fruity
Pebbles. I don't really want
Fruity
you
Pebbles
climbing
is a very
my
cute
wireless.
Name.
So the exterminator spraying every inch, is just washing the floor going to do it?
So my understanding is that is that bed bugs prefer to bite people. That they will bite pets if there aren't people around, but they don't live on pets. So that's a great thing. You know, you don't have to worry about bathing or picking off these bugs off of your dog or your cat. That these bugs, they like to hide in the environment, and they come out at night. You know, we all know about cockroaches and bed bugs that you turn the light on and they run. So you do have to clean the bedding of your pets. So sometimes, you know, oftentimes cats don't have bedding, but sometimes they do. So they could, your Fruity Pebbles could potentially carry a bed bug to her own bed where it would hide. So, you know, especially those kitty beds that have the roofs on them and just a little hole in them, you know,
yeah.
It's a great place for bed bugs to hide. So those things can usually be thrown right in the wash. And I think that that's what I would do is put it, number one, put it through the wash, turn it inside out, and put it outside in the hot, hot, hot sun. Easy to do, of course, right now. But these bugs don't live on the pet. They don't lay eggs on their host either.
Okay.
So they're going to lay the eggs in the beds. So that's the bedding and the area, the floor, your own bedding, your mattress, that kind of thing that you need to address.
So people do call me about this. Is not going to have to insecticide the entire place.
Well, that I don't know. I really don't know specifically about what people do.
Because that's part of the question. And I learned this. This was another life experience. The first exterminator, you know, came to my loft, which was very rodent-y, and put out all these things. And I said, "Well, what happens if the dog gets into them?" And he said, "Well, you got to keep the dog out of it." You got to pick them up.
Yeah,
not gonna happen.
Yeah.
You know, he was doing his job, but his job did not coincide with.
Well, I wouldn't want that toxic stuff, you know, in my house either. So I think that the sun does a great job, and the hot water in the washing machine. But if you've got holes in your mattress, you need to get rid of the mattress. So they're gonna hide in dark spaces. So really good cleaning. And I think borax goes a long way, you know.
Yeah.
So that is what has helped people in the past. And I don't know how you carry bed bugs in. I guess you can carry them in from if you're buying used furniture, if you're getting somebody else's mattress and things like that. But, you know, it would be unusual for pets to pass them between each other. You know, it's not a thing like it is with fleas.
Right. All right. Bree Borax. Okay, Graciela in Millerton. I've had Luna, my blue heeler, since she was a puppy. She just turned 10. She's never been a big barker except when a stranger comes to the house. But lately she's barking at well-known friends right up until they are almost close enough to touch. Her behavior is otherwise as sweet and mellow as always. Could she be losing her sense of smell, or is it more likely a vision thing? How would I be able to tell, and is there something I should do about it?
The first thing I would think about is with her age that she may be increasing anxiety, so she's losing some vision. Dogs don't tend to lose much in their sense of smell. It's so much more acute than ours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have so many neurons that have to do with the sense of smell that light up in the brain that they don't need even if they had half of what we have, they would know who is coming. Usually they know who's coming when they're driving in the driveway.
Yeah, if someone comes by car frequently, they know the whine of the car.
Exactly. So, you know, the first thing I would think of, especially with a healer, is that, you know, her job is to protect and to make sure everybody stays in line. And it may be that she's just got some increasing anxiety. And it's possible that her anxiety might be increasing if she's losing some hearing, if she's losing some eyesight. So I would think about that. I don't know, you know, that wasn't included here, her response. So she sniffs the person's hand, then she relaxes, or is it when, you know, when mom tells her everything's okay? But if she's barking, she's more concerned. And so, you know, have a conversation with your veterinarian about, you know, do we think that this is, so number one, a good physical exam.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Making sure that we have, you know, no urinary issues, things like that going on. And are there other, your vet typically would ask you questions that would target, you know, other signs of anxiety. So that is certainly more of a possibility, I think, than losing the sense of smell, as long as she's not showing signs of congestion.
What about, I just remember with the ruffian, the original ruffian, she was a shrieker from the day she was born, but as she went blind, she was super shrieky, because that was how she, you know, she would bark until she had assured herself, and that meant you had to be standing on her, basically, of what was going on, because she couldn't see Jack.
Right, right. Yeah, so...
And I don't know if that's... If
absolutely, I think that's a normal response, you know. I got to make a lot of noise to protect myself and to protect people, because I'm not really sure that this person who
I
recognize their smell of isn't carrying a machete.
Exactly.
Right?
Right, exactly. I'm doing my job.
Right.
So...
And there are ways to, you know, help with that, so, and help her relax, so... I think that, and one thing is planting special treats on new people that come.
Okay.
You know, and having them advance more quickly and things like that. So there are things that can be done.
And what about
to help
old
with
people
that
come? I don't mean old, like, you know.
What about
older, well-known friends? What about well-known friends? Would you plant treats on them as well?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
So that she becomes less anxious about, you know, intruder.
Right.
Coming into the house, if that is the, I'm assuming that that's when she's barking, you know, she's
inside the house. Yeah, it said she's never been a big barker except for strangers, but now she's barking at friends and stuff. And,
Yeah, so plant special treats on people and make that situation happen. If it's happening when you're out on a walk, make that situation happen with friends that... When she sees somebody in a distance, she doesn't have to go on alert, because it's going to be, the last 10 times I did that, somebody gave me a piece of cheese.
Right.
You know, that can help.
Or if your ruffian is like, I'll bark anyway, but come on, come forward,
yeah.
Hurry up, bring me my beef. All right, Jules in Troy. Now you have to do family counseling. Oh, good luck. My younger sister is going to be traveling this summer and is asking if I can take care of her one-year-old male coonhound for around 2 months. However, I am waiting for a hip replacement and can't really walk much at all. I mean, I can take him to Eliminate, but that's about it. I don't have a yard. She says he'll be okay, but I'm worried that it's not fair for the dog, and also that he'll go crazy and drive me crazy in the process. What do you think?
I think Jules already knows what I think.
I think so, too.
From the presentation here and the bells and whistles that go off with a, you know, a young coonhound needs a lot of exercise. So is a big dog, so could potentially pull somebody over who's had a hip replacement. So that's a kind of a dangerous thing. 2 months, you know,
that's a big ask, as they say in the trade. As much as you love your family, that's a huge ask.
And it's not the right thing to do for the dog either, you know, to spend the summer without any exercise. So,
with no yard. So, everybody has to have a kind of conversation about life.
Right.
It's difficult when you take on
a dog. It's a big commitment, you know. It's a big commitment.
Right, and if you discover as you have taken it on that you are not able to fulfill that commitment, then everyone needs to sit down and go, oh, hey, you know, because we're all living divine beings and we all need the care that one person doesn't deserve less care for, or one.
Right.
Yeah.
I think we understand what you're getting at, but I agree with you that you're just setting this up for disaster, and with the human's health and with the dog's mental health. And so what we don't want to is a coonhound then who's going to...
We don't want a crazy coonhound in someone, although it might fast track the hip replacement.
Right, but what we don't
want to do it that way.
What I do see is that terrible things happen. We set the dog up in the wrong situation, terrible things happen, and then we turn a dog into a shelter with a history of having done something terrible, and it's our fault.
Right, and that's just so... It's so preventable. That's why I was trying to do a nice, loving. that's where I was going with that. It's like, hey, people, it's, you know, you wouldn't want, if you don't want to be treated like that, don't treat someone else like that. And I'm just going to said it before, and I'll say it again. I'll say it as many times as I need to. That includes two and four leggers, or claws, or paws, or whatever.
And having said all that, we have reached the end of our program.
Oh, and I'm not out of questions yet.
Oh, I think you have to be.
Okay, I am now. All right, well, in that case, we agree, as usual. So thank you very much, Dr. Cannon. Always appreciated. This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Milligan Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440.
Pet Files Ask the Vet is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.